Hello, everyone. And after a long and pretty much unintentional break, we're back with Season 2, Episode 7 of Differential Diagnosis, a HouseMD podcast, where we're looking at Season 2, Episode 7 of HouseMD, called Hunting. My name's Harvey, and as always, your second differential diagnoser is here, and his name is Gaz.
Hi, pleasure to be here as usual. I like being called a differential diagnoser rather than a differential diagnostic, you know, expert or something like that.
Neither of us are experts.
Well, according to one podcast, they speculated that we might be experts, so I'm going to take that as a win.
That is pathetic but valid. I'll let you have that one if you need it.
I do. Things are tough.
Well, we're in the midst of quarantine lockdown, which I'm sure you're all enjoying. So here's some content to fill that time. Probably about 45 minutes to an hour. Enjoy. I'd like to blame the quarantine lockdown on the sporadic release of this podcast, but this sporadic release started way before quarantine.
Oh, yes.
So this is just general busyness and inability to edit episodes. I am the funnel. Gaz has happily been recording these with me, but it's been taking me a while to edit them because there's just a lot on, which is always fun. So I apologize to anyone for that, but hopefully we'll be sort of a bit more regular from now on.
Hopefully.
So, I guess we'll get straight into it, because this is a pretty jam-packed episode. It's one of those really good ones where we've hopefully got a lot to talk about, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it sets up the kind of jeopardy that is going to unfold throughout this episode quite quickly. With just like the introduction to this episode is quite hard. It just goes straight into the middle of a conversation between House and Wilson about the fact that House has basically looked at the records for Stacey, which is just great. Just like, uh-oh, this is going to be a time bomb. This is foreshadowing.
Yeah, it really gets straight into it. It follows on immediately from the end shocking twist where House broke into the private therapy records of Stacey in order to manipulate her. And it really, as you say, it doesn't start with any kind of him telling Wilson or him sort of sneaking around or leaving the room or something. It gets straight into Wilson just being like, Jesus Christ, you're a monster.
Which he is. He's a complete creep.
Oh, absolutely. It's disturbing. But this is where House starts to get creepy. And I think really brings a lot to the character. It's really starting to unveil that kind of irrational, emotionally driven and quite disgusting version of House, which makes him far more interesting than just the kind of noble sage that a lot of people think he is.
Yeah, this is borderline psychopathic.
Absolutely. Behavior. And in this episode as well, we have Chase finally does something. That something being Cameron.
Oh, Jesus.
But so not a huge step in either of their characters, but there's a lot of big moments in this episode when it comes to House and Stacey, Cameron and Chase's relationship, and then and that's it. That's actually it. So two big moments.
Well, yeah. You're also kind of glossing over that this could be the beginnings of a very substantial and significant relationship, one hopes. I'm a Cameron Chase shipper, I guess, which is short for someone who is kind of the pro that fictional relationship, I guess. I think that's it's got legs. It's going to go somewhere.
You like Chamron?
Chamron, that's it. I'm a pro Chamron kind of guy.
Yeah, it could also just be Chase.
Yes, it could literally be Chase or Camarace or, you know, all kinds of horrible chimeric names.
Yeah, I'm as much as I, you know, I know that people love the ships. it's this is one of those things where I do think the show does this well, and we'll go more into this, but having the two very attractive doctors like start getting together is kind of the bane of a lot of television shows, especially medical procedurals. And I think House MD does it quite well, and it does it in this very messy way, which is quite realistic, which I enjoy. But it is, for anyone who's watching the show like new for the first time, this kind of stuff where Cameron and Chase get together might just be the, oh no, here we go again.
Well, yeah, that is the risk of trying to ape cliche, is that you end up in some ways reinforcing that cliche rather than challenging it.
Yeah, you're right. So, which David Shore and the lads are good at doing, but it's like, but you're right, in order to approach the cliche, it's like you got to dip your toe in there a little bit.
Yeah. So we'll see how that pans out. It seems like I think it's going to be fruitful. I think it's going to be a beautiful relationship. It's going to be not dysfunctional. It's going to be like the center of gravity for this show, the homely, lovely nuclear family situation that is required for House to succeed.
Absolutely. Oh, and as anybody who might be hearing the children who should not be playing outside in the quarantine, but are on Gaz's end, which is very nice of them. So shout out to those kids and their parents.
No, hey, we're not going to shame any parents here because it's in a closed courtyard. So they're allowed to do that. It's a private piece of property. It's like a communal courtyard with a play area.
One big happy family of hundreds of people.
No, it's not like there are hundreds of people here just, you know. I think you're mischaracterizing this just to, because you're a bit pissed off about it. Because it's going to compromise your recording capacity. I can't do anything about that. I'm trapped in this flat. That's the way it is. And so are they. Do you want to shout at them? I can shout at them. I can open the window and just like shout expletives at children. Will that make you happy?
It could mix it up.
Could mix it up.
I mean, you know, if House MD's mixing stuff up in the second season, maybe we should as well.
What, are you saying we should track the moral decline of House and our own actions?
We should. Around subscribe. Season six, I'll just start eating while recording.
Eating what? That's the big question.
Well, well, guys, I guess we'll get into it. So go on, give us that synopsis.
Well, okay, sure. As always, these synopses are powered by house.fandom.com, the premier information resource for House MD. And it's, you know, different people associated with it, like directors, writers, guest stars, even diseases. Wow. So this is the synopsis for the second season episode of Hunting. Hunting is a second season episode of House, which first aired on November 22nd, 2005. A man with full-blown AIDS follows House home and demands to be treated by him. When House agrees, his condition continues to deteriorate, but the answer may be in his father. Meanwhile, Stacy needs House's help to capture a rat, which becomes House's pet, Steve McQueen.
I quite like that synopsis because it more focuses on the fact that House gets a pet rather than the relationship implications of that.
Well, you know.
It's a really funny version of the synopsis because as we've noticed, some of these synopses are like full-blown essays. And yes. Some of them are just like, House gets a new pet. What adventures are they going to have?
It kind of sidesteps the abusive relationship he's trying to foster with Stacy.
That's but, true. You know. You might watch this episode and think, wow, this is going to be really chill and nice.
Apart from the AIDS, that is pretty depressing.
That is pretty depressing. Well, we've got AIDS. We've got drug-fueled sex between colleagues. We've got lies, deception. We've got rats in more ways than one. And we've got our father and son relationship, which Oh, we love those. They turn up a lot in House. Nobody likes their father in House. So there's a lot to talk about. So let's get talking about season 2, episode 7, Hunting.
So, right into it with a mid-sentence cut. It sums up it sums up what happened in the last episode with Wilson's outrage. Wow, that's pretty good.
This show is very good at exposition through quite casual dialogue. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed this a lot with Wilson and House in particular. But I don't know if it's the actors or the actual writing, but the, like, Wilson, Robert Sean Leonard, manages very well to kind of just be like, House, I cannot believe you've done X, Y, and Z. But as if it's someone talking. It's a very, like, impressive element of the show.
Yeah. A lot of people would have went last time on House or something like that. And it would have been in a different character's voice. So every episode they'd have a different character's voice to do the synopsis. That kind of lead into the synopsis where it'd be like, it'll be like Foreman saying, last time on House. And in the next episode, it'll be like Cuddy saying it. I like those little details in crappy TV shows. Sorry, I needed to segue into that.
No, that's fine. But it's a really nice thing about House. And I know we've said this before, but because immediately, as soon as Wilson and House then leave House's apartment to go to work, then the patient appears. And that sets up the patient story. But I really like how House manages to balance the kind of serialized aspect of a new patient each week along with the continuing storylines, which it clearly cares about and it, like, retains the details of. It's, the show has taken quite a large break in expanding this Stacy story, but it's nice that the show never drops it. The show is now, it's like, right, now it's time for that Stacy storyline. It really focuses on it.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. It's really nice that they do it right outside of House's house or flat or apartment, I guess. 221B, nice little reference to Sherlock Holmes.
Of course.
Very classy. Oh, and then the patient goes into anaphylactic shock against Wilson's car.
Yeah, nice and quick.
Yeah.
Just, but I mean, in regards to the patient story, so should we talk about, because the patient in this episode is, I forget his name.
Yeah, his name's quite forgettable. And I don't know who it is. Oh, it's Calvin Ryan.
Calvin Ryan. Thanks, Fandom. So the good thing about Calvin Ryan is that, once again, I mean, the main focus is going to be on House and Stacy. But, you know, the show never, ever lets anything go to waste. So even though Calvin Ryan is, you know, somebody who he's basically got all of the symptoms of full-blown AIDS. And he, as apparently, we haven't seen this outside of the episodes we've seen, but we know that he's been apparently harassing and following House in order to get him to look at him.
Mm.
And so what happens is that Calvin Ryan has an anaphylactic shock because House basically touches him, which shows how weak he is. But also it's used as like a nice leverage thing of Calvin's like, I won't sue you if you treat me. So fantastic reason to get House to treat him. I always like the way that the show mixes up these reasons of why House takes a case.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like everything at this current moment, the next episode as well, it's extremely litigious. Which means it brings Stacy in because she's the counsel for the hospital. So it gives a reason and motivation for House to basically pester Stacy. So in this case, he's gone over to Stacy's house to discuss what he needs to do in terms of treating this guy.
Yeah, it always gives good motivation to everyone. And this is what I was saying, where the show doesn't waste anything, because as you say, we know that House wants to confront Stacey about the marital problems that she's having with her husband, Mark. So, hey, what a great way to have a patient who gives House a legal reason to take the case when House wasn't interested, but also gives him a reason to go and talk to Stacey. And at the same time, then, as we'll talk about, the patient then has his own issues, which then is used as a way to explore the team, specifically Cameron in this case. I mean, we say it every time one of these patients turns up, but it is very impressive the way that the writers do that. It's not just like, as you say, House just goes and randomly talks to Stacey. There is a reason why House talks to Stacey, and it's combined with everything else that's going on in the episode.
Yes. It's all very kind of efficient. Mm. Everything's kind of like packed in quite nicely. And then, like you say, they're not allowing this patient to go to waste just so that they can explore merely the relationship between Stacey and House. It's a way to bring in other characters, explore their dynamics, see where that goes.
Mm.
Also, in this episode, Foreman is taking a bit of a backseat, which is a bit suspicious. It's like, why? He's like the most neurotic member of the team. He seems the most dramatically interesting to explore, apart from Cameron, who is also a bit crazy. Chase is actually quite balanced, which is why he's so boring at the moment.
Yeah, Chase is he's too cool. That's the problem. It's like, but there will be some stuff about Chase, and then thankfully next episode has a bit more about Chase. So I guess they're making Foreman take the back seat so that we can get a bit of Cameron and a bit more Chase.
Yeah.
Which is totally fine with me, not because I dislike Foreman, but good Lord, they need to find something for Chase to do.
Yeah.
And hey, they got all of this stuff done in 5.5 minutes, which if this was the Turkish version of House, would have been about 3 hours into the episode by now. If no one's, not that I'd be plugging another episode, but we did just watch the Turkish version of House, and it is quite impressive in how much it manages to draw everything out by three times as long.
Let's be realistic. It'd be an hour.
That's fair.
Not three.
Just an hour.
Yeah. And it would be full of all kind of weird things going on as well. And the theme song would be playing all the time.
Oh, of course. God, you want the theme song playing at every opportunity. If House MD normal was like the Turkish version, it would just have Teardrop. Just playing constantly in the background, like it was the level of a game. So we've got this episode like has a lot of back and forth between Wilson and House. So I guess we'll talk about the Stacey storyline first, because it's Wilson is kind of used as a way to not get House to talk about how he feels about Stacey. But how Wilson is used is Wilson is sort of questioning House on the ethics of it. And I think what you get is the fact that House's reaction is all joking and like very much based on aversion, and he's trying to like dodge all the questions and just take the piss. If you've watched enough House by this point and learn how House is, you actually, that reaction tells you a lot more. You know that the reason why House is giving stupid answers is because he is actually more emotionally involved than he's letting on. And that's what I quite like, because if you just saw House hanging out with Stacey and just effectively lying to her that he cares, you might think, oh, is House just messing with Stacey, or does he actually feel something? Whereas I think the way that House responds to Wilson's questioning actually then gives you that answer, because House isn't being calculating. He's being very overt. You know, he's trying to avert the questions and dodge everything, which pretty much shows that he's a bit more emotionally invested than maybe he lets on, in that he's just screwing with her.
Yeah. And also this presents a new facet of House's personality, because in season 1, we got this kind of, whenever House was emotionally compromised, he would just not answer questions. He just shut down. But now he's kind of finding ways to deflect heavy emotional problems by being even more flippant than he is when he's dealing with very kind of intellectual problems. He's treating the intellectual his emotional problems like he does his intellectual ones with his colleagues or the team.
Yeah, and I think that kind of, as you say, it's less about shutting down and more now about deflection and joking. I think that this is kind of a consequence of House becoming a lot more funny, which, not that the first season wasn't a funny season, but I think the second season is way more energetic and a lot more kind of lighthearted with the House character. And I think that they don't just want House to just stop talking because it really ruins the flow of the episode. So he is a lot more deflecting and he's a lot more jokey and sarcastic now, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think that really makes the House character come to life, which I guess was just an element of them seeing the way that Hugh Laurie kind of fell into the character and the writing team becoming a bit more comfortable. But I would call season two of the character of House pretty much like the epitome of what the character is, where it's quite interesting seeing how it changes from season one to two.
And obviously they've had to think about where they want their character to, the character and the character's kind of weird traits for how he deals with hefty problems to evolve. So it feels like there's some evolutionary thinking going on about how they want the character to unfold, which is always nice to see. It seems very thoughtful, and it comes out in the writing.
Yeah, and I think it could be argued that that starts to go too far. And as we get further into the series, I'm sure we'll talk about that more. But this is why I really like that season two version of the character of House. It really is the kind of best balance of someone who kind of feels like a real person, who's being silly to entertain themselves rather than being silly to entertain an audience that isn't there, which I kind of get the sense that that's a bit what the later seasons turn into, when like House is doing a kooky thing by himself and it's like, who's he doing that for? He's a fucking, you know, he's a miserable alcoholic. He should just be sitting down and drinking, not like joining a potato firing competition.
Hey, no spoilers.
No spoilers at all. But the actual Stacey and House storyline is really elegant, actually. It's as we say, the kind of legality issues gives House a reason to go and see Stacey at home. And then Stacey mentions that she's got a mouse problem. And then from there, it's really just a very nice story of how House solves a problem of how to catch a mouse that she has, but that's then tied with them kind of spending a lot of time together. And it's this like, you know, and Mark's away all the time. It kind of feels, it's this nice setup of like, it's a bit of an emotional affair. I like that they're not just left alone and they just start immediately having sex. And then they're like, ooh, where do our feelings lie? I like that it's kind of, you know, they're chasing a mouse and they're sort of talking about their feelings and there's a lot of tension there. And I like how that's done, even though it's kind of, you know, they're alone and they could be having sex, that they're not, because they're human beings. They're complicated. Like, Stacey doesn't want to cheat on her husband. That's not what she would immediately do. And it's like, it feels like the way people actually start having affairs or relationships rather than just having sex instantly.
It makes it seem more dramatic and has more tension in there but it's not necessarily a straightforward will they, won't they type thing. It's like this weird intensity, I guess,
yeah,
between the two characters. Instead of going, oh, will they, won't they? Oh, find out in that season finale or something like that. Although you do see it happen, you see kind of the mirror version of how that could go with lazier writing, with the fact that Chase and Cameron, like, just get it on.
Yeah, but I guess what the sex that you miss out in the House and Stacey.
You get with the Cameron and Chase. It's like...
Yeah, with House and Stacey, so it really... There's moments where, like, they're staring at each other for prolonged periods of time while they're alone. And I like that they never make the move in to kiss. You can just see this kind of energy between them, which is really a lot of the acting, which is fantastic. but it's yeah, as you say, there's a lot of tension there, and it's not just a will they won't they, because the extra fun element is that, you know, you think it's not just will they won't they, it's why is House even here?
Yes.
Which you kind of get hints with the way that he talks to Wilson, but at the same time, you can never totally be sure. You're not sure if it's revenge or not. And then you, and then when Stacy does eventually find out, because House drops too many pieces of information, Stacy realizes that House has gone through her files and knows something he shouldn't know, because House kind of gets too carried away. And it's nice that the show is very much focused on how people think, and certain characters will try to deduce why characters think certain things because they know the way they think, which is very realistic and very true to life. So Stacy, it's not like House just says something that's in our file and Stacy's like, how would you know that? It's not that simple. Like, House is just very confident in asserting something and Stacy goes, you never make an assertion without knowing why. Why do you think that? Because he's saying stuff about her marriage. And it's really nice the way she kind of deduces House is lying to her, not because he just makes some stupid slip up, but because, you know, he just overconfidently asserts something and then she works out how he's thinking. Like, that is really good internal character writing.
And because they're in a relationship with each other outside of the season, her having a good handle on what his way of reasoning is seems plausible as well. So you didn't go, hang on, why did you come to that great leap of how do you get the conclusion from those great bounding leaps of reason? It's actually, you go, oh right, they were in a long-term relationship that was quite close, she's gonna know.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing that maybe you can only, I mean, obviously people eventually live with people for a long time. Like, you know, if, I mean, as a child, you live with your guardians or parents for a long time. So you kind of learn the way they think. But it's something you can really appreciate if you've been in a long-term relationship, because you can have those moments where somebody's being angry and you're like, why are you being angry? Like, you can kind of read into it. And it's really nice that the show kind of does that, that it's two characters kind of psychoanalyzing each other, but not in a really cheap way. They're like doing it as if they're actually diagnosing a person that they know very well. Whereas sometimes, once again, in the later seasons, it can be a bit of a, you know, you use passive words because you're a passive person who was abused as a child.
I get that. And it's just something I like about it is that you can kind of, it never says, oh, we were in a relationship for 10 years, that's how I know. It's kind of, the subtext is already there. You just infer it. It doesn't treat the audience as if it's stupid.
Yeah.
It goes, completely. Oh, right, cool. That's how she knows. Also, we have two kind of parallel stories going on where different levels of diagnosis are going on. On the one hand, you have the patient, they're trying to figure out what's sick, what's wrong with the patient. In this case, House is still doing all the same diagnostic procedures, breaking into the house, consulting, probing, trying to understand things. But he already knows the diagnosis. He already has the data. He already knows what the disease is in terms of Stacy. He's just doing this whole thing still. Why? It's really interesting.
Yeah, and it's even, and then there's an extra layer of that diagnosing where he's trying to diagnose the problem of how to catch the mouse.
Yeah.
And even then, the mouse turns out to be ill, and that intrigues House. So he sort of like does extra elements of this, but you always get the sense that the mouse diagnosing is just a reason for him to stick around in order to further diagnose Stacy and Mark's relationship, which, as you know, he already knows the conclusion. He's just trying to ask questions around that, which is why it's so interesting at the end where he makes the assertion, says, your marriage is terrible. She's like, you don't quite know enough information about that. What's going on? Which then, you know, I mean, they were enemies before this episode. House then becomes friends with Stacy, then they become even worse enemies. So it's nice. It's amazing that they manage to achieve that in such a short amount of time, that they kind of raise the stakes and make it worse, but at the same time give information away that these two characters actually do have feelings for each other, which then leads on to a further interesting discussion in later episodes.
Yeah. But it's just this kind of what really interests me is that kind of it's like the inverse of his diagnostic practice, because he already knows what's up. He's already read the file. He knows what's there. He's just using it as a means to get what he wants. Which I don't know what he wants. Does he want Stacy to leave the hospital? Does he want Stacy to be in a relationship with him? What's the deal? What's his motive? I don't understand. And that's quite interesting. Like, what is his end goal? What is his end game? Is it to eliminate Stacy from the hospital or not? Because in a way, Stacy is like a disease infecting the the body politic of the hospital.
Yeah.
Or really his mind, his sensitive kind of, because the hospital is him, it's his domain, it's where he flourishes most. But then Stacy comes in, it's kind of upset the balance. Yeah, it's also compromised his control, which is what he craves most. So what does he want? Is it just get rid of Stacy, or is it get your relationship with Stacy? Will that solve his problem of being in a compromised situation, even if he was to succeed in Stacy divorcing Mark? Would that solve anything? Probably not. She has to go, in my opinion. That's what he's after.
Yeah.
That's my personal kind of prognosis, is that this is not about love. This is about control. But we'll see.
Absolutely. I think he does want to get rid of her, and it's partly revenge, but there's... I think that is also, like, that's marred under this, like, he wants to get rid of her a lot as well, because he kind of has these strong feelings for her, and that's making him hate her and bringing back all that hate. There's a lot going on here. It's fantastic.
Well, talking about fantastic things,
yeah.
Cameron is on crystal meth.
Was
for this episode, and somehow gets off it quite easily.
Just once, you can do it once.
I
what I've heard. That's the old saying, right? Just try meth once, you'll be fine.
Right. It sounds like you're revealing a lot about yourself, if I'm honest.
I live in the middle of England. We don't have any bloody crystal meth here.
It's just one of these kind of casual meth binges, you know, whatever. And yeah. So what I mean is maybe it'd be good to pivot on to the Cameron story.
Yes, Cameron and patient story, because I think they go very much hand in hand.
Yes.
It's actually fairly simple. Like the patient's story himself, he's somebody who's been given an AIDS diagnosis, and he doesn't believe it because, you know, it doesn't fit his symptoms. And so the entire show, a lot of that is kind of the doctors trying to work out how it could not be HIV. But on top of that, you get sort of whenever he's near dying, he keeps talking about like his father and how he's sorry. And so you get this sense that there's like, you know, a deeper story there between a father and a son. But so the big theme of that is that you do then later, and throughout the character, just talking about his life, that he actually says that AIDS and HIV are the best thing that ever happened to him, because it allowed him to not care about anything and just be free. And then you learn that the reason that he's sort of fallen out with his father is that his father sees him as a person who doesn't take anything seriously and, you know, is, you know, responsible for the death of his mother through sort of a household accident, and that Calvin didn't really take it seriously and tried to, like, not that he was being flippant, but that Calvin, the patient, sort of just avoided it because he's not very good at, like, confronting his emotions. And so, but Calvin's trying to very much sell Cameron, who is a very work-driven and quite uptight person, that this kind of way of living is really good. And how that happens is that when he is talking about how HIV is what made him discover that fun and sort of having a good time is all that matters in life, he coughs on Cameron halfway through the episode. And even though it's extremely unlikely that Cameron has HIV from that, that kind of HIV scare and not knowing what's going to happen kind of makes Cameron go through that same process as Calvin. And she like takes some like crystal meth off Calvin. She like, you know, invites Chase round. She has sex with Chase, who is not high on crystal meth at this point and should probably know better. But Cameron sort of goes through this like really nice little character arc where she sort of confronts whether or not she enjoys her life, whether or not she's having much fun. And it's through like then seeing Calvin's relationship with his father and how Calvin's very lonely and detached that she kind of comes to that conclusion that actually a life with meaning is better than a life that's about fun. And it's very simple, but it's a nice character arc for Cameron to go through. And the fact that it's done so quickly and so efficiently is very nice.
She just had diabetes.
Oh, sorry, I must have forgotten that bit. So why is he responsible for her death?
Because he was able to give her one of his kidneys, but couldn't because he was HIV positive, so couldn't do it. So by extension, Calvin's father believes that his son killed his wife or mother by being HIV positive, not giving a shit.
That's the one.
Doing drugs and being gay. Yeah.
My apologies. I forgot about that. But yeah, you're right. But it's it all ties into that nice theme that Cameron at that point where she's at a crossroads of does she has HIV, like she is looking at Cameron. She's looking at Calvin as like what she could become, and it's even though Calvin's story isn't particularly unique and interesting in a lot of ways, it's just Calvin sort of, we learn about Calvin and his father and why they dislike each other. That's kind of used as this nice kind of mirror of what Cameron could be. And she decides to reject it. And it's so he's not, and you know, the actor who plays Calvin plays him very well. It's all very interesting and nice, but for the most part, it's like, it's a really good use of the patient to give us some introspection into the characters that we actually care about.
Yes, that's true. And also it's a bit of a kind of existentialist thing going on where it's like, well, what if you've got HIV from this, Cameron? What is there to live for? But for yourself, you must live in the moment forever. And Cameron's like, well, maybe that's not a good idea. And by the way, I didn't get HIV. Great.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the moment where she decides that she wants to live a meaningful life that she then finds out she doesn't have HIV. Not that I would ever suggest that her choosing whether or not to have fun or be career-driven would affect the HIV diagnosis, but it's very much the HIV diagnosis comes out as negative as soon as she makes that decision.
How incredibly convenient.
Indeed.
It would have been much more of a twist if she actually came out with HIV and then decided to live a meaningful life. That would subvert that crazy nihilistic trope. But no, we do not get that. And also it would just be crazy to try and delve into that whole hornet's nest of politics and HIV and all of that. So probably for the best, I guess, from the writers. But yeah, Cameron and Chase hook up, which will be the beginning of a wonderful relationship that will be very stable and long-lasting and fruitful. Will it not? I don't know.
Well, we know.
Do we? I don't.
We'll get there in 4 years. But I do want to... This is a very minor thing about the father, but the show kind of does a nice twist where everyone assumes that the father hates Calvin because he's gay. And when they question him on it, the father's like, no, I don't hate Calvin because he's gay. I couldn't care less. It's because he got HIV and killed his mother. And it's a nice little twist on it. It's like, you know, as soon as you have... And this isn't like necessarily lazy writing, but it could be very easy to just have a gay character and then have a story about his father hating him because he's gay. And I like that the show subverts that and is like, no, it's about something a lot more. It's about a lot of something with a lot more consequence to it. Like Calvin being gay doesn't change anything, but Calvin not being able to give his mother a liver and her dying is a pretty big deal.
Mm.
And I like that the show kind of does that instead.
I guess the other thing is that both characters are kind of looking for, like the father and Calvin are looking for forgiveness of each other.
Hmm.
His father's kind of like rough and tumble, hunting, fishing, that sort of thing. And may have been in denial or what have you, and wishes to forgive him, wishes to be forgiven by Calvin for the way he perhaps treated him. And Calvin is looking for forgiveness for the way he wasn't able to help his mother, I guess, and Calvin's father's wife, obviously, by extension. And so that reconciliation through the mutual contraction of a disease is really, really interesting.
Yeah, because it's Calvin caught. He ends up having parasites in his liver, which is the real underlying problem, which the father also has.
Mm.
And both of them are being misdiagnosed with things. Yeah. And it's when it turns out that they both have the same disease and they're connected in that way that they kind of, like, they kind of come together.
Mm.
Which is, you know, I mean, it's funny to do that with a disease, but it's a nice way of doing it.
Mm.
And then of course, Cameron and Chase become fuck buddies. That's where they end that thing. Because they're like, Carrot Chase is like, the bloody sex was brilliant. So we're going to do it again.
That's insane.
What?
That's an insane thing to say. That's an insane thing for Chase to just say, you know. We're going to do it again. We really liked it. It's like, well, have you confirmed that with Cameron? Did she really like it? She was kind of high on meth. She'd probably ask. Rather than presume?
No, yeah, a bit of a weird thing to presume. But Chase did kiss a 12-year-old, so I don't think Chase isn't exactly the most ethical man in these ways.
That is true.
Chase has had a very weird season too. It's weird saying those things like separately. He is a bizarre character, and he said very little focus on him, but all the things he's done are absolutely insane.
He's going for a journey, and obviously the writers just don't know what to do about him. Like, what do they do? Make him do all these crazy things. Okay, sure, let's do it. You know, Foreman's going through this thing of trying to becoming more of a leader and being more of a competent doctor and all of those sorts of things. Cameron is trying to understand what a meaningful life is. And also, that's been through a load of trials and tribulations, including nearly going off to Africa to help cure tuberculosis. Now it's being spat in the face with blood and then trying to question whether taking drugs is an avenue for living in the moment or not.
Hmm.
And now maybe finding some meaningful relationship in Chase. Who knows? Let's see how that goes. But Chase is just doing crazy things all the time. And there's no real semblance of an arc going on. It's just Chase kisses a 12-year-old. Chase has sex with someone who's on drugs. Chase ambles about with no real purpose in life. But it's okay.
Yeah, and I think the next episode is a bit more plot heavy on Chase, but you've already expressed that you think it's a bit empty, whereas I'm just happy that Chase is doing something a little bit more outside of like, oh, Chase kicks a dog to death in this episode.
Which is entirely plausible.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I've forgotten that episode where it happens. Maybe it's in season 3. Maybe it's why he's fired. Who knows?
Or picks on overweight people for some reason.
Oh, yeah, he hates fat kids. He hates all fat people, actually.
Yeah, which is terrible.
But I think we've tied that up pretty well.
Yeah.
I think it's a very succinct episode. It's one of those episodes where, once again, it's so succinct that we can talk about it quite easily, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been wonderful finally getting back into the groove of things, Gaz, and doing another episode with you, because I have missed doing this.
Oh, that is very sweet. I wish I could say the same. No, really, it's been pretty good.
Excellent.
But I guess now we're into... I don't know what this episode represents within the grand arc of this season, though. That's my main issue. I guess now Stacey is an enemy, not a friend. So
this is kind of... I'd say this is like the inciting incident. If you were going to split the whole season up into three acts... Mm. Of the storylines, like this is the inciting incident that really starts the kind of like second act of drama and redemption that's going to go on in the middle part of the series between House and Stacey, because it's very much like House has played his hand now, and I think that he was trying to initially like mess with Stacey, but I think that by pretending to be emotionally involved with her, I think he's become emotionally involved with her, and that makes his scheme of revenge a bit more complicated. And
interesting.
So I'm very excited to see where that goes. And but as with all House things, the writers don't just turn it into shouting. Like the people are like handle this in a very passive aggressive way, which is always more interesting than shouting. So it's going to be fantastic, but I guess we'll look into the next episode on Monday when we look at the mistake.
Yes,
as it's called.
But maybe House has already made the mistake.
Ooh,
there we go. I'm formally calling this period the Stacey Wars, just like the Vogler Wars should have been a thing too.
This is very much like this is the Vogler. This is very reminiscent of Vogler. This is the series antagonist, but this time it's love and not a power hungry billionaire. But well, everyone, thanks for listening. As always, you can only listen to this. We're an audio only thing.
Yeah.
And we hope to see you next week, where we'll just continue our ongoing exploration of season two. So thank you if you have been consistent listening for putting up with the delays, but hopefully that will come to an end now. So we hope to see you on Monday for season 2, episode 8, The Mistake.
AKA Stacey Wars part 2.
Absolutely. So it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
See you then.